scared.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, hello. How are you doing?
Good. I started the recording right away so that I do not forget to hit.
Okay. Sounds like a good plan. Good plan.
Hello. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Susan. It's been an unusually long day already.
Yes, it has. But I'm so glad you're leading the group, Joe. You're doing such a great job.
Yeah, we'll try to get it moving as much
like
as
you said. You're doing fine.
Thank you.
And then maybe you can go to bed early tonight.
Here. I think Susan, your lights might have gone out.
I'm sitting by the window. There we go.
Okay.
There. If I move away from the window, I'm okay.
Okay. Yeah, because just a silhouette that was there.
Well, I'm often in the dark. What can I say?
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Yeah. So, Susan, I'm recording, but I'm willing to say this in the recording. This is probably one of the most difficult board packets I've ever been part of. And I've been worrying about this discussion and anticipating this is going to be a tough one. So I too am going to bed directly after this.
Well, I have to say, I was so impressed when I read it with the thoughtfulness. And I also could feel the pain because
there
it's
is
been
a
long
pain.
Time since we've had to cut and defer. Yes. But I get it. And I think that you took others will join us soon. I think you took a very logical and compelling approach. And then the letter that Joe and John Paul and you and Leon wrote was particularly helpful.
Good.
So I'm hoping that we'll get additional funding, of course, but you never know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with funding. You never know.
That's right. All you can do is, like our agencies do, is ask.
Isn't it interesting that tables have turned?
Yes.
Yeah. And I remember what it was like, but I haven't been in that position for so long.
Right.
Yeah, super interesting.
Yep.
Well, I'm looking forward to tonight's discussion.
Me too. You know, I feel more prepared this year than I have in past years. It's it helps to have some two-year funding.
Yeah.
And I'm so pleased we've got a lot of proposed two-year funding because it gives us more time to talk about what we're doing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. This, you know, last year was easier. We had about 20 mm-hmm. applications to consider, and this year we have 30.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. Yeah, you recommended a lot of two-year funding. And I remember how controversial the idea was a few years back, but I think it's great.
I heard you all saying it and I wrote it down.
Yeah, I pushed it.
Yeah. It makes sense and it keeps it consistent.
Future planning, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. Hi, Elaine.
Hi. I'm just trying to get everything organized here on my desk, which is built up like that with different stacks of things. So I'm gonna find this a stack for today. Joe, thanks for letting me know about that webinar about that Macy did with.
Yes.
United Pride. That was mm-hmm. that was a good one.
Yeah, it was. It was.
A lot to think about.
Mm-hmm. It's a constant just to think about it, and hopefully, I think we're moving in the right direction. Really, at least.
Yeah.
I mean, I was surprised that Macy did it.
I was too. That's kind of why I tuned in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was about gender fluidity and kids and all of that.
Great. It happens in mm-hmm. Mohammed Seymour too.
Yeah.
It does. I mean,
uh-oh.
What's up?
There it is. Oh, good. I had the agenda all ready to share, and then I minimized that field and lost. I thought it was gone, but it's there. Yeah.
Five. I think we have four.
No. Well, we do. One, two, three,
four.
Don't forget Matthew.
Oh, there you are. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, initially I said, oh, we had on the four. I said, no, Matthew is the new all guy.
Right. Yeah. Not used to looking for your face.
Do you have a quorum?
Yes.
And there's yes, we do. Kyle. And then Kyle's about to pop on. And John usually comes in a little late because he's coming right away.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully I can still see people in when they come to the waiting room. I want to put the agenda up there for you.
Okay. So, I mean, since it's time already, we'll go ahead and call to order. And Stephanie, could you go through the roll call, please?
Susan Fowler?
Here.
Matt Hausman?
Here.
Daphne Maurer? Elaine Palencia?
Here.
Kyle Patterson?
Here.
Julian Rappaport? Jane Sprandel?
Here.
John Paul Joachim? Joe Omo Asagie?
Yeah, and Julian just checked in.
Hello, I'm here.
Okay, Julian's here. Okay, so citizen input. Since you're at the building, anybody out there? No. Okay, it's... approval of the agenda.
I so move.
I think I saw citizen input from Claudia.
Oh, okay. Claudia, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm sorry. And I apologize. I think I put up the hands clapping instead of the hand waving.
I thought you were clapping for us. I mean, we did a great job.
You do do a great job. But I apologize for that. My name is Claudia Lenhoff, and I'm the director of the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. And first of all, I wanted to start out by apologizing because I missed the meeting when you all talked about our proposals. So I apologize for that. I was actually on the job, but not available for this meeting at that time. I just wanted to give a couple of quick updates. First, one of the things that I saw in one of the comments of one of our programs was a question about us working virtually. And I just wanted to explain that we don't only work virtually during the pandemic. Probably a better descriptor would have been remotely, but we do work with people over the phone, by text, email, Zoom, and we also do work with people directly in person when needed. So we have gone to people's places, you know, to work with them, to their homes, their motel, whatever. We're finding ways to work with people. The other comment that I wanted to make is that in our proposals, the mental health board is the primary funder. And as staff have noted in the comments, the mental health board is funding about 81% of both of our programs, which are relatively new programs. But I wanted to explain that even though we have not secured additional funding specifically for those programs, we have secured additional funding to serve the individuals that we serve through the programs that you fund. And just as an example, I wanted to let y'all know that we, earlier this year, we applied for funding to the City of Urbana through their CARES Act funding because we were encountering a lot of our clients, the clients served by your funding, who were homeless and medically fragile, and they were unable to stay at CU at home because they couldn't get up and down off the floor, or they couldn't leave in the mornings the way that they are asked to do. And the specific clients who we started out with are clients who are going through reentry into our community and who desperately needed housing that was not at the shelter. And so I wasn't able to get a lot of funding to help them. So I actually reached out to the city of Urbana, and the city of Urbana was very generous with us and gave us funding up to $20,000 where we can keep these medically fragile folks from being on the streets. We're keeping them at a motel. And then in the meantime, we've had to, by necessity, expand our work to help them find permanent housing. And so that means working with the Regional Planning Commission. We've joined the continuum of care, you know, providers with an MOU so that we can make referrals to the Regional Planning Commission, to the voucher programs for these individuals. And so even though the funding to keep them housed in a motel is not reflected in our budget for the programs that you fund, I did want to let you know that we bring other resources to bear for the individuals we serve through the programs that you all fund. And of course, right now, housing is a huge challenge. And one of the really big problems that we're running into is that, so you're going to see some advocacy work on our end on this, but one of the big problems that we run into is that in the city of Urbana, landlords are legally prohibited from discriminating based on criminal history and also based on source of income. And source of income is how you pay your rent. So, for example, these RPC vouchers, a lot of landlords in Urbana will not take those vouchers. And people just say, oh, well, they won't take the vouchers. That's wrong. They are actually prohibited from discriminating on that basis. And that is, that discrimination is part of the reason that one of our clients, for example, has been in a motel for over 120 days that we are paying for right now with the funding that we got. I'm working with other folks to try to, you know, to try to break through this and get this person housed. But we have five or six people right now, including a couple in motels that we are paying for. This is even before CU at Home is going on pause, but that we're trying to help them, and they are all basically MHB funded, their clients from our MHB funded programs. So I just wanted to let you know that even though that kind of funding doesn't come into the proposal that we wrote for y'all, we are doing other work to try to bring more resources to serve those clients. And one other example that I'll give you is we have a contract with Regional Planning Commission to also help with our prescription drug fund for these individuals as well. And you won't see that reflected in the proposal that I wrote to you because that funding is for clients from all walks of life, but definitely a lot of our clients served through your funded programs are getting that benefit as well. So I just wanted to share that information just to help paint a little bit of a broader picture of the work that we're doing with the funding that you all have given us. And that's all. And I just wanted to say thank you. I think this is a really hardworking board. And I know all of you who serve on the board serve on it because of your commitment to this community. So I just wanted to thank y'all and thank you for this opportunity to address you.
Thanks, Claudia. Thank you very much. Thanks for all the extra information also. Thank you. Okay. Any other input or participation? Looking? Because last time I did not see your hand raised, so. Okay. This is my comments. This is going to be a tough conversation. We have
do approval of the agenda first?
Oh, yes. Yes, approval.
A couple seconds of a break.
Yes, we needed a second. Anybody who's seconding? Okay, Susan. Okay, thank you. So, all in favor?
I have to do a roll call.
Oh, you have to do a roll call. Yeah, I keep forgetting. I want to just keep moving.
Matt Hausman?
Yes.
Valencia?
Yes.
Carol Patterson?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Jane Sprandel?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Joe Omosagie?
Yes. And John is here also, John Paul.
Yes, I am here.
Oh, okay.
Okay. This is going to be a tough one. I mean, not a tough one, but we've not always been flushing funds, but this time we have to make some adjustments. And we're hoping that we can get some ways to replenish some of the funds that we have. And this is part of a long conversation we'll have today and we'll have again in 2 weeks. And I don't have anything else to add, just let's get into it so we can get as far as we can with this conversation today. Okay, let's go. So the draft staff recommendations started on page 4. As we start going through it, anything?
So I guess the important things start on page 14, because up until then you're seeing like, it's just, you know, my context plus a gigantic portion of the funding priorities as approved in November of 2020. But at the bottom of page 14 starts the things that we will request board action on May 26th. So we are very interested in your thoughts on anything from page 14 on.
So we just want to take it one at a time. So crisis response and intervention. So all the funds are here and what we will do. Any comments? Was that a?
I think Susan has.
Oh, go ahead, Susan. I'm sorry.
Thank you. I spent a lot of time reading and rereading the proposed responses to the budgets requested by the agencies, and I just wanted to say that given the reduction in funding facing the board, I found the responses across all programs to reflect a reasonable approach and an optimistic approach that we might be able to find additional funds in the future. I think we should speak about each proposal individually, mm-hmm. but I can see that there was a great deal of thought that was put into this and that it was not an easy set of recommendations to make. We've been in the privileged position the last 4 years of being able to say yes to everything that seemed reasonable and likely to benefit our county. And we're finally in a position where we don't have as much money as requested by the proposals. And so we're back in a position that some of us were in several years ago, 4, 5, 6 years ago, where some tough decisions had to be made. And, it'll be good to talk about these one by one, but my sense is that the staff in proposing their recommendations based on our conversations the last two board meetings have been conservative, appropriate, and cautious given the shortfall in funding. So I just wanted to start off by saying that I applaud you for the amount of work that you've been engaging in and for the difficult conversations that you've had. And of course, we'll want to talk about these one by one.
Yes. So go ahead, Matthew.
Okay, I had a kind of a clarifying question, Lynn. It's on page 16, and this is kind of what we've talked about a little bit. It's before we get into the actual one by one. When you're talking about some potential workarounds, and you mentioned delayed effective dates with prorated contract award amounts. So the concept would be that if somebody didn't get into compliance and we decided to delay their effective date, say like 3 months or say just 1 month, we would prorate it so they get like 1/12th less in the award.
That's one. Yeah, that's one of the meanings. The other meaning is a much smaller amount of money is saved by this other strategy, which is if you were funding a new program or a program that has vacancies as of July 1st, we would not pay the full amount of the contract until the person was hired. But these are usually very small amounts of money, like 2 weeks of just one of the, you know, people charged to the contract. It could be we're saving $500, but it's sort of, it saves the agencies sending us that money back a year later.
Right.
So, you know, that's why this is like a whole basket of different ways to save a little bit of money.
Yeah, I realize you're trying to nickel and dime everything again, but okay, I just wanted to make sure I was clear on what that proposal
Thank you for
was.
Asking. That is what I mean by if we have compliance issues that take quite a while to resolve, which now I don't expect because I think everyone's on track to get it all fixed. But if there were, then you are exactly right. Like hold it for a month and then take that 1/12th out of the total amount. That was what I was thinking.
Okay. Thank you. Good clarification. John, did you have a question or that was Kyle?
I think Kyle had a question.
Okay, go ahead, Kyle.
So, and also, you know, there's reference in here that Lynn has submitted a request to the county board for the amount of the shortfall. As you all may know, the American Rescue Plan Act, which was passed by Congress a few months ago, the county is going to be receiving $41 million over the span of 2 years. And, you know, me and Lynn and the finance chair, Stephanie Furtado of the county board have talked about this issue for some time now, about this concept. And with the Treasury this week, or last week, very recently released the guidelines for the interim guidelines for the funding qualifications. And Lynn, I don't know if you want to speak to it, but it seemed like you're pretty confident that this is a qualified expenditure. The political hurdle is the county board would need 15 votes. You know, there's 22 members, 15 votes is two-thirds, I guess a two-thirds vote, you know, and that, on controversial issues, that could be a high hurdle. I feel pretty confident that this is something that, you know, across the board, people are taking very seriously and see the value of us being able to transfer this money to the mental health board. I think Susan alluded to, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, they had to make tough decisions. And I think it was probably before I was on the board, because I don't think that, I think it's my fourth year doing this, and I don't think we've ever had a situation like this where we can't fund most of the things that were, most of the requests that were made. And, you know, I as much as this is a, you know, kind of a downer situation, I think that we're sort of fortunate that this happened this year. because we do have access to these additional funds. So, but Eileen, I don't know if you wanted to talk about the ARP.
You know, I can just quickly, when I wrote this, I didn't know as much because I think it was just Monday or Tuesday that the US Treasury finally released some guidance with meat on it. And there have been webinars every day and every night. And so a lot of people are becoming aware really quickly of what the eligible uses are, but behavioral healthcare is like in one of the early pages, and it is clearly indicated as what this federal rule means when they say support for the public health response to the crisis. The behavioral healthcare is right there. So I'll continue to read and listen to webinars just in case there's anything within this that's not eligible. And, you know, so we're not wasting everyone's time. But this week, the prospects look better than they did when I wrote this, but they could all change tomorrow, so.
Okay, Julian.
Oh, I just thanks for bringing that up, Kyle. And I just want to say that I wrote a brief memo to the county board in which I expressed what I think is true, that given that they're looking to get input from as wide a range of people as possible in the county, we've already done that homework, and everybody knows, you don't have to be an expert to know that mental health is currently under great duress for many people. And it helps to account for, I think, the fact that we have a request for funding far more than we can afford is another proof of that fact. So what I think we want to be suggesting, or at least what I'm suggesting that as one individual in the community, is that it might be a good idea to take advantage of the fact that we've already looked at a large number of proposals from a large representation of the human services community in attempting to deal with this problem. And so we could pretty efficiently and representatively say that collaboration between the county board and the mental health board in figuring out how to use these funds would make about as much logical sense as it could. So I think that, you know, other people might want to point that out to the county board as well. And I don't mean just members of the board, anybody listening who has an interest in the problems of mental health could also send, I think, a 250 word limit memo to the county board suggesting that they perhaps should collaborate with the mental health board, who is in many ways ideally positioned to help deal logically with those funds. That's it.
And I should say that I feel like a terrible cheerleader. if you guys didn't know, the county board is going to be having a, that Julian alluded to, on the 25th this month. It's going to be on a Tuesday at 6 p.m. And it is a request for public input on the American Rescue Plan Act funds. There's a really wide variety of things that these funds can go towards. And I think there's a lot of different opportunities. So, you know, whether you just, you know, attend to listen or would like to provide some input, that would be, you know, really appreciated and really valuable. There's a lot of investments that we could make into different types of anti-violence or behavioral health stuff, you know, a lot of the things we deal with here. So, and Julian, where did you see the information at for the guidelines? Because we have it in the agenda, but I don't want to send people to like a 150.
Oh, there was a memo from Darlene that I got from Lynn.
So, and I just put the documents into the chat.
Okay, great.
Perfect. Thank you.
And they're PDF documents. So the first one is just one page where the county's explaining what they need, and they need it quite quickly. So if you're interested in doing it, please grab these documents. The other is the interim final rule, and it's a PDF, so it's searchable. Mm-hmm. So you can put in a keyword, like whatever it is that your agency does. Mm-hmm. Or what you think is important, and find where there might be a reference to that in the rules. So those are in the chat.
Okay.
Yeah, Kyle, I sent out a note to board members with these documents encouraging them to give input, because I think if the county board just hears from me five times, that's going to be really like sad.
We could do worse.
So we could, and I'm looking at all members of the community here. I mean, Claudia, Jason, Elise, you guys send a word out there. Okay, John, go ahead.
So I actually wanted to ask Susan something. In the past, when we didn't have funding, you know, all these groups do an amazing job, and with the funds that they get, you know, it's really impressive. But things that I was looking at, say, if we, playing devil's advocate, like if we don't have enough funding, things that I was looking at as criteria would be, in my view, but you know, I'm open to other suggestions, but like looking at personnel that are being funded, because from my perspective, it would be more difficult to rehire someone and get that program back on track than it is to, you know, not fund a certain like activity or physical thing that they have to buy. Making sure that there's not a redundancy in the service, if there's a redundancy from some other program. Obviously, a lot of these are not redundant programs, so you know, I don't see that being a big criteria in eliminating what we put on a list of what we are as like highest importance to lowest necessity for funding. And then other things like biggest return on investment, on like what will provide the most money saved in the future. Like if we do not fund this certain program, what impact will it have on those individuals, like detrimentally? Like will it cause them to increase in their rates of going back to prison? Or is this gonna be a program where the kids just aren't gonna have an after school program? And will that lead to whatever X, Y, and Z? I just wanted to know what you guys had done in the past, if there were specific things that you had looked at in the future in case there isn't enough funding.
Well, I can't say that we had specific criteria outlined. Julian's been on the board even longer than I have, but I think, considerations were stability and longevity of the program and impact of the program and the cost of trying to revamp the program, replace the program if it were set aside and not funded for a year. That was always a consideration. And then, you know, the impact on the community for losing the program would be a consideration. But I think you've identified, if you defund a proposal or no longer fund a proposal and you lose the personnel, being able to start it up again is incredibly difficult. So we were more likely to take percentage cuts and not fund new programs, if I recall correctly, when we were under a pinch. And of course, Lynn was on staff before I was on the board, so I would also refer to Julian and Lynn.
Well, I'll defer to Lynn, but I don't recall any year in which it looked as short given relative to requests as it does this year.
So, that's true.
And my understanding, maybe I misunderstand it, and Lynn could probably help clarify this as well. I assume that Darlene's memo is representing what the county board is wanting to accomplish. And as I understand what they're looking to do on the 25th at that meeting, is not so much to entertain specific program proposals, but rather develop a process for how to do it. And so my thoughts are simply that we have a pretty good, if you're going to deal with the problems that are widespread in mental health broadly defined, that cuts across many different areas that Lynn has done a pretty good job of outlining in her communication. I mean, you know, it ranges from traditional mental health services all the way through a lot of non-traditional things that fall into the category, but requires you to actually think not stereotypically about what mental health is. This board and our staff, really, the county has here a set of staff who have a lot of experience and I've given a lot of thought to hearing from an awful lot of people across the entire community. And so there's a one step in making that process easier for the county board would to make use of the experience and knowledge that the mental health board staff in particular have about what's going on in our community, where the needs are, and interpreting mental health broadly rather than narrowly. So I don't know, it's hard for me to know what people on the county board who don't know anything about mental health think mental health means. Sometimes I think they imagine what it means is, oh, what you do is you go sit with a doctor in a room somewhere and talk about your mother. That's hardly, we mostly don't do that.
So, I mean, yeah.
So we need to educate, I'm just thinking we need to educate people that mental health is a very broad meaning to it and so on. So that's my
And I think, yeah, when it comes to managing compliance and, you know, monitoring contracts for behavioral health things, it's definitely something that the county board is not capable of. I don't know if you've ever seen one of our meetings, but
unfortunately I have.
It's an excellent point. That is something that we've talked about as well. It's very apparent that there are many aspects of what it will what spending these funds will require for the county, and the county does not have the capacity already to do many of those aspects, whether it's compliance, keeping up with guidelines, just maintaining the finances and doing all of that. So if we were to work with the mental health board for something beyond just the request from this year, it's something where I think that additional staff might need to come into play. So I think there's a lot to really figure out on, you know, how to make that work exactly. And also we still have like no idea what we're spending it on, because, you know, the feds just told us a few days ago, you know, what we can, but there's definitely, I mean, there's a lot of wide variety of stuff out there that we're exploring, but, you know, we'll have to, I guess, cross that bridge when we get there.
Thank you. Oh, Elaine?
Before I was on the mental health board, I was on the disabilities board. So I remember a time from that board when, and it would be, you know, kind of the same thing as the mental health board, when there wasn't enough money. And what the county board people at that time had, they had, I don't know if you remember this, Lynn, but some of them attacked the numbers by simply trying to divide the number of people served in a program and find out the dollar per person and then say, well, you know, this program serves 30 people for $300,000 and this program serves 60 people for $290,000. And so that's the program we want to fund, you know. And so we had to do quite a bit of work at that time to make people understand that you cannot compare what very different programs do with their money and what they need the money for per person who is being served. So if, you know, if that fight comes up again, we have been there, and some people, some have expertise in countering that, but it's a very quick and wrong way to look at how agencies are using their money. We ought to be forewarned.
Yeah. Thanks for that insight.
Yes.
Thank you. Lynn? Is that a hand up, Lynn?
Yeah, because I can't raise my hand. I can't technically raise my hand, and it is out of order for me to speak unless you let me. But I appreciate Elaine bringing that up. That has one of the reasons for some of the really complex data collection and reporting requirements that we have. The whole DD set of contracts has a different reporting system now because of those challenges and questions, because you can be really effective on behalf of one person with DD with, like, you know, a couple meetings a year, or with 24-hour services and including some really intensive behavioral supports that cost a lot of money. So really trying to explain to an outsider what those variations in costs mean is very hard, and it caused us to change the whole, the data that we collect and everything. So we are prepared. It's just more information than anyone wants to see all at once, but we are prepared with a lot of data to answer some questions like that because they have come up before.
Thank you. Okay, now we'll get started. We needed some background. Okay, on page 17, we'll start with that.
Can I talk again, Joe?
Yes, you may.
So this is goes back to what I think Susan and Julian referenced, that in the past, some of the traditional ways of saving money are just funding things that already exist, where people are already employed, and we have developed a whole new appreciation for this workforce, as you know, we're lucky to have any workforce at all sometimes. Mm-hmm. So where there are people are, you know, providing the services, this treatment, this particular set of recommendations really preferenced those programs where they're fully staffed and serving people. So, and it just feels so bad during a year when you asked for more, mm-hmm. and you know there are new needs and increased needs, and agencies responded to that request. Yeah. It feels bad to say no to those offers to do more, but it just, for money,
yeah.
I had to present with something sort of responsible. Anyway.
Yeah, so we're operating a system of scarcity, so that makes it a little bit tougher to come to. So, Julian,
go ahead. So I'm now thinking about how we're going to proceed through this enormous list of information that we've got here. Mm-hmm. We've already been through it one time, right? Talking about mm-hmm. each of the programs in detail. Yeah. And so what I tried to do when I looked at this was to think about, Lynn had spoken and written about her approach. And she mm-hmm. tried to take what I think I want to, maybe it just goes back to what Susan started us off with. As I look at the approach that Lynn has taken here, my general sense is this is about a sensible and in many ways conservative and maybe even more optimistic than I was going to be myself when I first looked at the problems. So I see it as both conservative yet optimistic. I think it's very rational. So my suggestion, we don't have to do it at all, but you know, it seems to me that maybe the most efficient thing we could do is kind of go simply ask, are there specific things in this set of recommendations that any board member wishes to discuss further or object to or wish to change, rather than necessarily go through every single thing over again?
Okay.
That's just a suggestion.
I value that quite a bit, because initially when Lynn talked to me about how much money, I said, well, let's just take a hatchet to it and cut 10% of everybody. That wasn't going to really make sense, but that was the first impression. Kyle, did you have a hand up?
I was going to suggest a process, but I like Julian's better, so I'm not going to say anything.
Okay, that will work. Anyone else have any disagreement with how Julian has propose that we go about this? Susan?
I agree with that approach, and I'd like for us to do it, and I suspect Julian would have meant it this way, by the three major categories.
Okay.
Because that's how it's grouped, and we usually approve that way by the very end of the funding cycle. So if we could talk about those that fall under crisis response and intervention first, and then innovative practices, and then system of care. That chunks it in a nice way. I also just wanted to note that I was really pleased to see the number of two-year recommendations, and they seemed tied to programs that had not asked for additional funds or substantially additional funds. And I think that providing that kind of reassurance to programs of funding in the future is also helpful in this time of what I can only call flux.
Yeah.
Feast and famine. We don't know which one we're in.
Yes. Okay. Any other comments about this, the proposal? I think Susan and Julian's ideas really work well together. Okay. Then we'll go that route. Oh, Daphne's here. So, hi, Daphne. So let's go ahead. Other than the first set, is there something that you see that jumps right out and says, maybe not? Go ahead, Elaine.
Well, the one that jumped out at me was the first followers peer mentoring for reentry. Mm-hmm. Is you're recommending zero until additional revenue becomes available. So I'd like to know a little more about that.
If one of them is on the call, it might be good to hear from them. But my impression is that this program has not been functioning at a very high level because it's in person. Uh-huh. So due to the COVID restrictions, this program is really minimized right now. And they had a lot of staff changes, and they have had the great good fortune of additional funding. So they may not need this level. I mean, they requested this level. And so I believe agencies, when they request a certain level, but I think that right now it's not up and running, not to this capacity. So I was treating it like a paused program. But it isn't fully paused. It's only partially paused. So it's hard in situations like that for me to get an idea of how much it would cost to keep the piece that's still happening. We're working with them on some revisions to the program plan and the budgets that are based on this additional revenue they got and the changes that they have had to have made in response to COVID. So I'm not quite clear on where they're at, but I thought I would treat it like a new program.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And they did mention at some point to their own board that they would be okay without all of the funding from us. I'm not sure if that's still the case, but they have been getting other funding, so I had my fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. And there is another one like this, Elaine, where it's kind of a big risk to say no.
Yeah. Well, since that was that particular program of theirs was their first program, that's why it drew my attention. Mm-hmm. So I guess you'll be monitoring that to find out just how it's evolving now and what they've got going on. Okay, thank you.
And maybe that's helpful to me too, to hear you all, like, if there is extra funding or if I redo the budget, if I get a new projection and we have more money, to know where we should put it first.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've really had a big commitment to keeping that one going. So, and it's built up slowly. So that's why I was asking. Thank you.
Thanks. Looking around. Was that the only one?
I was just going to comment that I meant to mention earlier, excuse me, that the ARP funds will be coming to the county next month. So in June. That's when a vote would be taken on whether or not to transfer the additional funds to the mental health board. As you can see, a lot of the recommendations, it says to defer decision - hold until additional mental health board revenue becomes available. And so the hopes are for, the applications that say that, that can all be covered, come June. And it's really kind of an awkward timeline of all of these things sort of happening at once, which has been like the gymnastics we've been trying to figure out over the last month with Stephanie Furtado and Lynn Canfield. And I just really want to thank Lynn for, obviously the whole past year has been really crazy for the whole staff to figure out how to make things, fit into place. And now with all of this money coming in, it kind of just adds another, complication to things. But I really just, appreciate the work they put forward.
Okay. Okay, go ahead, Lynn.
So given what Kyle just said, where we have recommended holding at current levels instead of increasing to the requested levels where there was a requested increase, there are only a couple of exceptions to that. But so I was thinking that would be another great use of the ARP funds if it were to come, would be to move those contracts up to what they requested. Is that too messy from what we're seeing today?
Susan?
My main question would be, if we increase the funding to the level requested, which would of course be my first inclination since they have a plan, mm-hmm. would we be able to maintain it beyond this year? So when they came back with an expanded program the second year, do we anticipate any new funds, or do we anticipate a tight funding level again? Because we may just be postponing some decisions. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't consider increasing certain programs that are very promising. But it does have some implications on what we can do the following year if we don't have increased funds. Lynn?
Go ahead.
I appreciate what you're saying. I think this is the responsible way to think. And I'm going to say, something that's sort of the ugly side of this work is that every year, if the agencies are not able to fully staff as promised in the contract or to deliver the services, they send a lot of money back. So this is why over the last 4 or 5 years, I've encouraged you to over budget, because I'm sort of betting on this failure. It's a terrible negative perspective, but it happens to be the truth. And now we have a community where we're seeing fewer and fewer people really jumping at the chance to work in low paying jobs. So I do think that's going to happen to us again next year. And so I might be more comfortable telling you in the future to overfund again, but right now we have really toppled over from that strategy that continuing the commitments at the current level, it's just like you said, Susan, kicking it to next year. And when we have, and then we would have to make cuts. So anyway, so those are the factors that, probably will still continue. Be able to reallocate funding that doesn't get used.
Thanks. Anything else on this, in this group? Susan?
I don't know if you're asking for a motion to move on to the next group or what, but I think that there's not much more to say.
Okay.
And I don't know that it's a study session, so mm-hmm. we're not really finalizing we're discussing and making recommendations. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it.
So,
yeah.
So I would just move on to the next group of proposals and.
Okay. John, did you have something to add?
No.
Okay. So let's move to the next group of proposals then. Do we need a motion to move on or we just move on?
No.
Study okay. session.
Let's go.
We're on page 21 now, correct?
Yes.
I mean, I basically agreed with the recommendations put forth by the staff and Lynn of not renewing or not funding new projects right now until we know we have funding for them. So like the Terrapin Station, Sober Living, and the Well Experience. And the Champaign County Healthcare Consumer Disability Services. So I mean, I don't think I have any additional recommendations other than what's already been made.
And these agencies could also, I mean, Kyle might be able to answer this question. So can these agencies also ask for money on their own, not just through the Mental Health Board for the ARC?
So you're saying like if they had like something additional they wanted funded by the company through the funds, could they? I don't know.
Okay.
To be blunt, we, like I said, it's still very early in the process as far as having an understanding of exactly how everything's going to work and exactly what we can spend it on. I hope by early next month we'll have a much more clear picture of what that process will be. I mean, we'll likely have to work with, you know, some sort of entity or additional staff that are capable of doing that because, you know, just in its current capacity, the county doesn't have the capacity for that.
Okay.
One thing that would be nice, making sure that it's not just a one-year funding. If you guys do end up funding the Mental Health Board with more funding to give to these agencies, making sure it's a two-year funding. So at least we have some time for these agencies to find other funding. And I think for Lynn, one thing that might be helpful is if we do increase funding for these agencies, kind of earmarking it and telling them like, this is for this amount of time. We don't know in 2023 or whatever, 2022, that this money will be here, your funding, original baseline funding, hopefully will be this at least, that we hopefully when we look back, we're like, okay, this is what we're gonna do at least for a baseline for a lot of these organizations and then go from there based on what funding we have in the future.
Yeah, and so the way that the funding works is that the county will receive, some odd number around 20 million in June and then 12 months after that. Would be the other half, another 20 million. And we have until the end of 2024 to either spend or, and Lynn understands this better, but the money has to be accounted for something or it has to be, the term is escaping me, Lynn.
Allocated.
That's what I was looking for. I knew it was an A word, I just couldn't.
Yeah. I think they're using words like obligated, committed, and allocated. Yep.
Yeah, which I don't fully know yet what that means. I think that also might be the mindset of that might be in the context of you can use the money for infrastructure stuff, so construction projects that take longer. There is a limitation, you know, it was, you know, brought up by somebody else. And, the requests and who requests what and what programs come through kind of changes every year. Things, you know, vary. Hopefully in the long term, we can kind of figure things out. And I know that, you know, sometimes, you know, people can use funding for leverage for other funding. And at least the programs you're working with will have a clock. Because usually I feel like for social services, when that grant runs out, you don't really have much of a heads up. So this would kind of, people would have that sort of security, at least to know that, you know, this is going to end at some point.
Okay, thank you.
All right, I had a question, maybe a clarification, and maybe it's been said and my brain's a little fried. So it is possible for us to allocate funds to some of our chosen, you know, grant these funds to certain groups. And then, you know, come late summer when we know what the county has done, then we can revisit some of these that didn't get their full amount or maybe didn't get any approval. Is that correct? Or do we have to wait till the following funding year?
No.
Go ahead, Lane.
I think that's a great question, actually. I mean, I could tell you, I was just thinking we could reconvene if we have the great good fortune of extra funding. You know, you have a bunch of meetings scheduled. We could throw that in one of the meetings. That was just what I was thinking, but you all can tell me how you would prefer to handle it. We could handle it up front, like May 26th, we could handle it.
Yeah, if we have more information by May 26th.
Or just, you know, in the event of this is what you want to approve, you know?
Okay.
And I think, I mean, the way things are, what we're talking about in this context is funding programs that have already gone through the application process and all of that stuff. So, I mean, really it could just be a budget amendment, I feel like, something pretty simple. I mean, as far as like the contract side that the staff does, like, I don't know, you know, what level of complications might add, but I think from our end as a board, as far as process goes, it should be pretty simple.
So I could work it into to one decision memo for you on May 26th, where you're making a decision to hold these programs and then fund them when funding becomes available. We can do, I mean, I can write it that way. For staff, for all these programs where we're saying, like, give them the 21 level, you know, but then we want to bump it up if there's extra funding. That would be a contract amendment process, but we're ready for that stuff. But it's up to you. I don't think it would be very hard for me to prepare the memo that way.
Okay.
And, you know, just a reminder for, particularly for people from agencies who are here tonight who didn't receive the full funding, there is that public input at the county board meeting later this month. And, you know, every county board member's email and phone number is on the county website. So, you know.
That works. Julian? Julian, was it? You're muted.
Sorry. Still muted. Hello, okay, I'm back.
You're okay.
Sorry. Mike, I have a question that, and I'm gonna ask it partly because Claudia's here, so she might speak to it. But the program that they're asking for as a new program is going to have what they're requesting to do, which I finally figured out why they is to assist people in getting SSI and SSDI funds. So unlike many of the programs that we fund, this would actually bring in money to the county. It will bring it in through the individual people who will now have support and therefore alleviate some of the, not just for themselves, but it will also alleviate some of the burden for the county. So this seems to me like a particularly logical, even though new, program at this time. And when we're worrying about, well, if we start a new program, what's going to happen if we can't keep it going? This one just seems like a particularly good candidate given the type of program it is, which is just another. So I wanted to point that out and ask Claudia if I'm understanding it correctly. And also to point out that not all of these programs are the same. So the implications for funding a new program, we can't really answer those in a batch. We do have to talk about each program and what it would mean if they were funded and for how long and so on. I don't think we can escape that when it comes to a new program, but this one seemed to have a certain sort of self-reinforcing explanation that it might be worth Claudia's pointing out to people at the county as well as to us. So that's what I one did I ask about? Am I understanding this correctly?
Go ahead, Claudia.
Okay, thank you. Yes, you are understanding it correctly. Thank you. That work is so incredibly time consuming and labor intensive, which is why we don't currently do much of it. But just to illustrate what you're saying, I have in the past helped some people apply for and get approved for Social Security Disability, SSDI. And in one case, the back pay lump sum that the person got was $124,000. $124,000, because his case had been languishing for so long. But what it meant was his divorced wife and their son got a huge chunk of money to help them out. This gentleman was able to get his own apartment, live independently, get a car, and he's still doing very well today. That's kind of an extreme case. A lot of the other cases might be more in the tens of thousands in terms of back pay lump sum. But the more important thing is that whether it's SSI or SSDI, once the person gets approved, as long as their condition doesn't improve significantly or something, they have guaranteed income for the rest of their lives. And then the other thing is, the other positive thing that happens is a lot of services and resources for people who are disabled require SSI or SSDI approval as a definition of disability. And then people can get, you know, assistance with housing and all kinds of other sort of resources by virtue of having been deemed disabled by the Social Security Administration. There is so much pent up demand in this community for that. And I've helped a few clients recently, some of the Mental Health Board funded clients, get approved for SSI, and they've started having some income coming in now, and that helps. But yes, I think your understanding of that program is exactly right.
Thanks for the clarification.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So moving on to the next tier.
Oh, sorry, can I?
Oh yeah, go ahead, Susan.
Yeah, sorry. I was hesitant to bring this up because I have spent years seeking SSI and SSDI for a family member, and the process is incredibly painful and full of appeals. And so the point that if you can get someone, which we did, as Claudia mentioned, on SSI, suddenly you're eligible for Medicare, you're also, or Medicaid, food stamps, housing voucher. It's amazing the cascade effect once you're approved. I mean, you're still on wait lists, but it does completely transform the lives of people who are approved. So it's the best leveraging of funds that I could think of. And I would probably put as a priority this program for the next level of funding, if funding is available, because of the impact it can have.
Thank you very much, Susan. Okay. So moving on to the next level of programs. If there is nothing, we're not voting, we're just discussing, so. Susan? You think you're muted? You're muted.
Sorry, I'm okay?
Yes, you're good.
Okay. There's only one program that's deferred, I think, in this group. Is that correct? It's the Rosecrans, and it's a program that has been funded, correct? And so I assume that it's deferred related to issues in the current contract year. No, it's just
there are no problems. It's just your funding is a really small portion of it, and also been
30%, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought this one might survive without your funding. So this was one of the really tough calls that I put in here, but yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, you thought that. Nope, there are no compliance problems.
Okay. And it's just the 13% of funds that it has from the Mental Health Board, which is really fabulous that it's so small amount of money that they need to provide the services. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Yeah, go to Matthew.
Just a question with the Dream House. And this is kind of looking ahead a little bit, because you have it, the recommendation for 80,000 of their 100,000. But in the memo to the county board, you have the, in the tier sheet, you have that listed as the 100,000. So I was kind of.
Yes, you have caught something important in that in the tier sheet that I created for the county board and then shared with you. It's really an example, and I was trying to just put whole programs, you know, instead of partial funding from each entity. I was trying to group it like whole programs and see if I could get close to the target amount, which is around 770,000. So yes, you caught it. I think full funding would be great, because the expansion that's described in this application is something that the board has been looking for a couple of years. It's really quite nice, but you know, so I didn't want to put 20,000 in one column and 80 in the other column, but that is probably what we will be doing because of the timing. I would probably show you another tier sheet that has like small amounts of money in the ARP column. So thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. So we'll move on. If there are no other questions or comments. Okay. So now we're going on to the communication with county executive. I think we've talked a little bit about it.
We had the collaboration with the.
Oh, I skipped. DDC. Oh, I skipped.
Yeah.
My bad. Oh, yeah, Scylla and Head Start. Yeah, Scylla expansion. I mean, so the Scylla House or the Scylla program itself has always been about funding, helping staff members and things like that. And the Scylla House is up in the air. We have two houses and one's been kind of phased out. So what, it's a zero. I mean, there's nothing there, but I mean, it's part of a larger conversation as to what to do with the Silla House, houses.
But I think for the purpose of this conversation, maybe we're meeting our obligation to the DD board through funding of the other programs. And we had already prepaid our Silla debt, hadn't we?
Yeah.
So that was a smart thing to have done.
Yes. Hindsight.
So you don't pay anything this year, but we will start talking to you probably in June about the project. Kim Bowdry is heavily into research on what our best next steps could be. So we'll begin that conversation with you in June. So no matter what, you won't be putting more money into the project if that, you know, there's potentially a worst case scenario where you sell the houses. I mean, and that might help next year to fund more programs. It'll take a while for that money to, if that's what happens anyway, but yeah, thank you.
Is that really a worst case scenario?
Yeah. I mean, right. We'll bring you information. You can decide what the scenario, best scenario are. But the point is you shouldn't have to spend any money this year on Silla or in PY22.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But you still have this, it's like a $50,000 credit toward, you know, the obligation that the mental health board has made to using some of its funding for DD.
Okay. Anything else?
And I it just occurred to me, and maybe this has already been talked about, I don't remember. We haven't said anything at all about our anti-stigma efforts and Ebert Fest and that. Do we have any information on that? Or what's the local story there? Not just us, but the whole idea.
Well, you paid for this year, last year. So, you know, you paid for it last year and it didn't happen. We did a little virtual mini Ebert Fest and it was quite nice, but the big thing you paid for didn't get. So it's happening in September. And I believe Stephanie is going to join a conversation with them about whether it's really going to happen in September and maybe what will happen next. She's been involved with it for all of its years and will be part of that discussion.
Okay, thank you.
We ought to have more info next month for you. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on.
Is everyone supportive of the recommendation to fund the Head Start, the portion of Head Start, which is DD, and the DSC Family Development Contract in full using your DD dollars? Okay, thank you. I will share this with the Developmental Disabilities Board. They're going to be considering contracts next week.
John had a hand.
Oh, the only thing I just wanted to just reiterate with Lynn, you think the $84,500 that we're projected to go over, if we do fund everything with the recommendations, that we will be okay based on the experience from the board?
I really tried to give you a balanced recommendation. I could, you know, I will go into the budget tomorrow and do it again and see if I can get closer to balanced. Or it's just, I think it's okay. I think it's affordable.
So worst case scenario, say everything gets funded and they have personnel for everything. We don't get any additional funding and we're down $84,500. What happens in that scenario?
It's a small reduction in the fund balance.
Good to know. Thanks.
It should be okay. I mean, it should be all right. I got fund balance information just a few days ago. So this is, we're at the moment where you have less money than any other time in the year, but the same obligations every month, and we can get through for about 3 months. So that's still pretty good. That, yeah. Fund balance goal is much higher than that, but I think we're doing okay.
Good to know. Thanks.
Thank you. So in this next set of the briefing memorandum, page 32. Any questions or comments as we take a look at it? Yeah, Susan.
I don't mean to dominate at all, but I was thrilled to see a request for money to improve the annual pay for people who are direct support professionals, because they keep leaving the field. The turnover is just incredible. And anything that we can do to get them to a livable wage, I am fully supportive. I thought this was a great briefing memorandum, and it made me proud to be on the board, including the other items in the memorandum. Thank you.
Yeah. No, yeah. Thank you. That was great. Living wages are great. As we go through, any comments or questions on the other items? Because it's 7 o'clock. I'm good with silence, because.
Do you all have any energy left to talk to me about the funding guidelines? There's the revisions that we want to propose to you, and had a really interesting conversation with the new board members about this the other day. Basically, the spirit of the revisions that we would like to make is to change our audit deadline, because it's so hard for agents to meet the audit deadline, but also not do extensions anymore. Just if it's not done, payments are paused. This is the basic proposal. If it's not done, payments are paused for 3 months. If it's not done after that, the contract is terminated, and the agency's not eligible for funding until the audit is done. So it seemed to me like a compromise that would save all of us a lot of time and put our evaluation activities more on track. But I shouldn't speak for the new board members, but one of them pointed out something really important to me, which is that there are not a lot of independent CPA firms doing this in this community. So if we move deadline, we're just kicking the whole set of audits further down the road. So this may not work. And I tried to think of a way to stagger the deadline, but I can't think of something that's fair. The larger agencies, which if they're late, it's often because they're waiting for information from the state. So they can't be doing it first. The smaller agencies often need a lot more technical assistance to get their audit done. So they, I couldn't figure out how to have a two-tiered deadline system. So it might not be worth revising these funding guidelines at all, but we also added, you know, for some reason we didn't even have in here that agencies are required to have a CLC plan, which is something we've been doing for 20 years. So that was a really good catch. Anyway, so I'm interested in your thoughts. I will bring you a decision memo on May 26th. If you want to wait till then to discuss, it's okay.
Well, you know, my philosophy is if it makes the staff's job easier and our agency's job easier, that they can focus on what they're specializing, I think that's what we need to do.
We're also suggesting allowing agencies to charge a little bit more to the contract for these products, because CPA costs, again, keep going up. We already know that. We raised them a couple years ago, but apparently we didn't quite hit the mark.
And that's a big question for me, the audits and the costs for the small boutique agencies that don't have a lot of funds and they don't have a lot of expertise in the bookkeeping and the accounting, and how do we have to provide, or can we provide a framework in which they can get their audits in on time by having an expert on hand or something, or someone on contract that we could.
Well, I mean, it's like we put the independent CPA firm on contract to do their audits, or they choose the CPA firm to do the audits. There's really not an easy way to do this. Mm-hmm. That I think it's probably more appropriate for agencies to choose their own contractor. And what's been happening is maybe they didn't realize they needed to.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just like either way, you're going to pay for mm-hmm. it. It's just,
oh yeah, you will, like, pay for it.
You're choosing who they work with, or they're choosing who they're. And if you choose, I think as a government entity, there would have to be a bid process involved.
Okay.
But the way it is, like, the agencies have control over who they want to work with, the way we've done it. So it's a good question, and we do spend a lot of time talking about it, but so far I can't find a way that it would be better for us to employ the independent CPA.
Yeah. Okay, just checking.
Do we require the agencies to identify an auditor at the time that we engage a contract with them? We do not, right?
No, and we could ask them to do that during the first quarter, like, which is July through September.
All I'm doing is responding to what I just heard discussed, that there's a small number of auditors available. There's a question of what mm-hmm. of their workload and schedule and so on. And it seems to me, if we're having a problem and the agencies are having a problem, it's totally reasonable to expect them to engage an auditor at the time that they get a contract from us, and have the auditor know at what point will this be due, rather than waiting until it's due and then trying to find an auditor. That seems inefficient and okay. less likely to work. So it wouldn't be very difficult for us to simply require that at the time of a contract, they identify an auditor.
I don't really know the logistics of how an audit is done. Wouldn't an audit begin after that fiscal year has ended?
Yes, I'm not suggesting that they have an audit, only that they have an agreement with an auditor, or that they've identified at least who will do the audit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, just, I mean,
my impression is they don't do that.
Mm-hmm. I think Julian's question that the rate limiting step is identifying an auditor, or is there other things in performing the audit that is slowing this process down?
Who knows the answer?
I was gonna, because go ahead, I was Matthew. Talking with Lynn about this because of my own experience dealing with looking for auditors and things like that. And on other grants that I've applied for, that was one of the conditions that if you didn't have an audit, you had to have paperwork. So kind of what Julian just said, you had to have a letter from a CPA firm saying that you're on contract to have an audit performed. So that could be something as well as that letter and a schedule of when that, so if they want to try to get it done 3 months after the end of their fiscal year, they kind of already have that priced out. And instead of, again, all these CPA firms getting every agency in the community asking for the audit within the same 3 month window, if it's kind of scheduled out a little bit more in advance, that might be helpful.
Okay. I really like that idea because we recently heard from an agency that didn't really have an excuse. Basically, we just kind of lost track of when we were supposed to get the audit in, you know. Mm-hmm. So that would be good for the agencies to know that up front, to be reminded themselves of it by the process of getting an auditor.
Okay.
I like it, and I'll work something up and put it in there if that sounds good to everyone. I think that's great. We've, you know, some of the other things that we might be able to do for agencies that aren't prepared to do an audit would be easier for us to do if we knew in which ways they were not prepared, which they would only be able to tell us if they had already contracted with an independent CPA firm to tell them what they're missing. This could actually help us solve that other problem and like sort of key into what else we could do to help. So, okay, thank you. Okay.
So, what next, and are we done?
We're done.
So, move to adjourn.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, all in favor. Or do we have to roll call it with that?
No. Bye.
Just to go home.
Just home? Well, we're already home. Oh, mostly home. Okay.
All right.
Say have a wonderful evening and see you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
Good night.
Everybody. Bye.